Welcome to Homemade is Best with Helena Brigman and Russ Turley. This is show number 8. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Homemade is Best. My name is Russ Turley, and with me is Helena Brigman. She runs the website Clearly Delicious at clearlydeliciousfoodblog.com. Welcome, Helena.
Hey, Russ.
Hey, and we are going to be giving you an exciting episode. Now, this is, I've been anticipating this for a long time, not only because it's been a couple weeks since the last show, but because, it is such an exciting topic, and we'll get into that in just a moment, but we want to just do a little review of some past items that we've been talking about, right?
Yes, for sure. Well, actually, Russ, in real time, it's been a while since we last recorded our last episode. You've been all over the United States. I've been all over the United States, and here we are. But I am dying to know. Did you ever try a Kalamata olive?
You know, I was visiting some relatives over in Tucson, and I did get a chance to try the Kalamata olive.
Oh my gosh!
And thumbs up.
Yeah.
It was. You know what? There, you mentioned. I mentioned the green olive with the little red pimento, or
yes, pimento.
And that's not a Kalamata olive.
No, that's a green olive.
just the green olives are the ones that are disgusting. And
yeah.
I will go to my grave. Those green with the little pimento are still disgusting.
Okay.
But the Kalamata olive, delicious. I did. When I was having Greek olives, those were kind of new to me. There was a Greek restaurant down by the office, and I was introduced to those. And I thought, oh, those are great, but the Kalamata olives are very similar. They're not that dissimilar.
That's awesome. See, I knew you'd love them. The Kalamata olive, it's pretty expensive, actually, like by unit compared to a black olive, which are already pretty expensive. But they're also like the saltiest olive, and they just kind of melt in your mouth. They taste amazing. They go great in a Greek salad, and I just love them. So I'm glad that you're on board with this, because when we had our original podcast and we were talking about Italian cooking, and you had no idea what the Kalamata olive was, I was like, Russ, this needs to stop right now.
Well, you know what? And I probably had a Kalamata olive. I just didn't. I thought Greek olive, Kalamata olive. I don't know. They were all just running together for me.
Yeah.
And old green olive. I thought that was a Kalamata. It was just something left over from my childhood. Just that was still running around my brain. That was just incorrect and needed to be replaced by the correct information.
Yay. I'm so glad that Homemade is Best can educate you.
Well, hopefully that's exactly what's happening for everybody out there listening.
Yeah. Good. Well, great. Yeah. That's exactly what we're trying to do here. So I'm so glad that you love the olives.
Yes. So, well, with this, let's not to delay any further, but today we're talking about Girl Scout cookie recipes. How to cut out, this is actually horrible the way we're this whole episode, but to cut out the Girl Scouts and you can make your own Girl
yes.
Scout cookies at home.
Well, Russ, I don't know if you've noticed this, but you know that you can only buy Girl Scout cookies from vending Girl Scouts 1 week a year.
Well, I don't know about 1 week, but it's literally a very short window.
It's very short.
It's right about now. I think it's already over.
It is already over. Yeah. They've already packed up and made their money.
Yeah. So, and if you find a Girl Scout, she might have, I know a friend of mine is a Girl Scout leader, and she is the local, warehouse for all Girl Scout cookies and for their troop. And so her living room is literally full of Girl Scout cookies when they start selling. And hopefully they are empty, but it is empty by the time the end of the selling time comes. But, I'm sure she has a couple boxes. If I called her up right now, I could probably get a couple boxes, but why not make them at home, which is just the best idea ever.
Exactly. And honestly, I do want to admit, making them at home is going to be such a great fun experiment, and they taste great. I can testify to this, but you can also find them on Amazon.com. Like if you are out of season and you're desperate for a thin mint, you can just go to Amazon and search for them, and they are available on Amazon. You're paying about $2 more though. They're $5, $6 a box because they're online. And they're being they're being like sold through some random like bakery vendor. But if you want to get that $3 box, that $4 box, you got to go directly through those Girl Scouts.
Yes. Well, you know, it's interesting because a couple weeks ago, we have some banter, some backstory here about our Girl Scout cookie experience. Now, we have, I live very close to Orange County, and I live in LA County. I'm right on the fringe. And so I have friends in with it that are have Girl Scouts in Orange County and some in Long Beach here in LA County. And there was an interaction on Facebook with a friend and saying, "Oh, what's your favorite Girl Scout cookie?" And I'm like, "Well, there's only one. It's Samoa's. Samoa's are the best Girl Scout cookie. There's chocolate, there's coconut, there's caramel, and there's cookie. And they're the best." And I've always, even since I was a little kid, you know, whenever Samoa's first came out, I have no idea. But when those were always my favorite. And
yes,
one of the Orange County ladies came online and said, "Oh, we don't call them Samoa's anymore. We call them Caramel Delights." And I said, "The hell you say?" I will. And then my other friend from Long Beach says, "You know what? We here in Long Beach still call them Samoas." So I vowed to never eat an Orange County Caramel Delight. I will only eat Long Beach Samoas. So
I love this. We said this on another episode, and I was like, Russ is taking a stance. His political platform is saying Samoas and not Caramel Delights.
Yes. And then also recently, somebody posted, I think it was, I frequent the website Reddit, and somebody wrote on there, you know, "Say it isn't so, Girl Scouts." And it was this picture of a box of Girl Scout cookies. And then the package that came in the box, and it was about, you know, the box was about 6 inches tall, maybe 7 inches tall. And the package of cookies in it was about 5 inches tall. So there was a large amount of space, you know. That's always the rub on like cereal boxes. It's by weight, not volume. And, you know, you get to open the box and it's like halfway down the box. You're like, "Where's all my cereal?"
Yes.
Yes. And so I don't know if it's like that, but I forwarded that, put it on my Facebook as well, and there was a discussion about that because, you know, you only get them once a year, and so you want to maximize the amount of cookies you get. And if they're chiseling down on the number of cookies, well, there's only more reason to make your own.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, the problem with the Girl Scout cookies, Russ, is that you go and you buy that box. You buy that one box. It's the gateway box. And you are a goner. That box is going to be gone. You know you're going to eat the whole thing. And it's going to be very hard to pace yourself. And then finally, when that box is gone, it's like crack. You need another box. Or you have nowhere else to get these cookies. And then this magical cookie. And that's part of the reason why when people see Girl Scouts, they just like freak out. They're like, "Oh my God, give me a box of Thin Mints right now." And they put like a 20 on the table. And they're like, "Give me as many Thin Mints as you can with this $20 bill." I've actually seen people do this. And so, I mean, yeah, it's this magical experience. They have us hooked. I think there's like small strands of crack cocaine in these cookies because they're so good.
Well, you know, and everybody has their own favorite. Now, like my wife, she would not ever eat a Samoa. And my son, one of them is hooked on lemon. The one who doesn't like chocolate. He was really into lemon. And so the little lemon ones, the lemonades, or I can't recall exactly what they're called. He is really into those. But my wife is all about the Thin Mints, and she will buy the Thin Mint ice cream when it comes out as well. And it seems to only come out that's around this time also. I think that's a missed opportunity for the Girl Scouts. They should be selling that stuff, I mean, all year long. But they do create this huge demand for it. You know, when they do come out, everybody's like, "Oh goodness, it's Girl Scout cookie time. I get to go have my cookie again."
It is. It's very much like this little miniature cultural phenomenon. It's like, it's almost like Christmas rolls around and you want something peppermint, or the fall rolls around and you can't get enough pumpkin stuff. So it's a seasonal thing. And it's part of the way that we approach our food. Like it's Girl Scout time.
Yes.
That sounds very strange, but it's Girl Scout cookie time.
All right. Well, before we get actual to sharing recipes and talking about and how to make your own cookies, we want to know, what's Helena excited about?
Yes. Well, actually, Russ, can we backtrack for a second?
Oh, no.
Because there's a very important thing that we listeners need to know about. You and I are actually kind of associated with the Girl Scouts.
What?
Well, okay. I was a Daisy. I think you need to know this.
Oh.
Do you know what a daisy is?
Well, no, I don't. I've never heard of a daisy.
Okay, a daisy is the teeny tiny itsy bitsy youngest group that you can ever be a member of the Girl Scouts. And I didn't even know what it was when I was involved with it as a little girl. I think it's like ages 3 to 6 or maybe 3 to 5. They're like the tiniest youngest of the Girl Scouts. You're too young to be a brownie, so they call you a daisy. And there are actually daisy troops. And I remember I was a little, I would go to these things once a week with my mom and we would do little arts projects. And then I had a sash and my mom would like sew on the badges we'd get from these little projects that we did. And it was awesome. I was a daisy.
Well, that's cute.
It's the youngest and cutest of the Girl Scouts.
Now I've heard about brownies and
yes,
Girl Scouts, but I never knew there was a lower rank. So how old are you as a daisy? I mean, how old are you?
I was super, super, super little. I was either right at kindergarten or I was the year before kindergarten. I was young. I was probably 4 or 5. Very, very, very young. That's how little, that's how hard it is for me to remember being a daisy. But I do remember the sash. I wish I still had it. That would be amazing. And I remember my mom like slowly adding more badges to the sash. And I was like, ooh, I can't wait for this thing to have 8 badges. Woo. Like, I want this thing to be covered. I'm a little 4-year-old who knows how to glue rocks together. Woohoo! So I wanted to tell you that, but I will also, we're talking about Samoas, and I have a very big announcement to make, Russ. I have received one of my very first of many to come, I'm sure, engagements from the male community. Someone asked me to marry them over a box of Samoas recently.
Wow. Awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. I didn't even know the guy at the time. And I was out with a group of girlfriends and at a local like bar. And our waiter comes up and one of my friends is who knows him. She actually works at the same bar. Says, Joey, here's your tip. And she throws a box of Thin Mints at him. And he goes, oh, Caitlin, I can't believe you're tipping me in Thin Mints again. You know that my cookie is the Samoa. And she goes, I hate Samoas. Samoas suck. And, you know, there's like this little war going on. And I finally chime in and I say, are you kidding me? Samoas are the best cookie. The Girl Scouts wouldn't even be around if it weren't for the Samoas. And this guy looks at me, says, thank you. Gets down on one knee and asks me to marry him. And, you know, it was very tempting to say yes because I saw a very happy future of sugar rushes and Samoas. But then I realized it would probably be a very fat and unfruitful marriage. So I had to say no. But my very first engagement recently came over a box of Samoas.
Well, that's exciting.
I thought you would like to know. It's so important when people actually get engaged. So I thought it was important when people kind of engaged. And it was the Girl Scouts brought us together. And actually, this guy, whenever I see him, all we talk about are Samoas. So he's my Samoa friend.
That's great. Well, the magic of the Girl Scout cookie.
Yeah, the magic of the Girl Scout cookie. So,
well, it's interesting because as a father of 4 boys and of current Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts, we don't do cookies. It is taboo for Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts to sell cookies. I mean, it's an unwritten rule. I don't think there's an actual rule to it. So I know in Cub Scouts we do the weekend after Thanksgiving the kids pack for the Cub Scouts go up and they pick mistletoe up in the local mountains.
Uh-huh.
And then they come back and they package it up, a little bow and put a little card and a little Ziploc bag, and they sell those for $1. So they're,
Cute.
It's very cute. And they sell the heck out of those at Christmas time, the first couple of weeks.
I would buy that from a Boy Scout in a heartbeat.
Yeah. And then they're Cub Scouts. They're even smaller. They're first grade to fifth grade. So you can wait to get those first graders out there in their cute little, you know, missing teeth. And would you like to buy some mistletoe? And, I'm sorry. I didn't say that right. Would you like to buy some mistletoe? You know, because they've got that that list from the teeth missing. It's great. And
how can you say no to a kid like that?
Exactly. You can't. You cannot. It's impossible. You'd be heartless. But and then in the Boy Scouts, they actually, the kids sell, and they're, you know, by that time they're, you know, the voices change. You know, my dad.
Would like to buy some mistletoe? No.
My 12-year-old son calls me on the phone. Hi, Dad. You know, it's not really a cute thing anymore, but they do. They sell popcorn.
Do a
nut fundraiser around Christmas time.
Okay.
So when people are trying to make cookies and stuff, they sell nuts, and they're actually a really good deal. But they don't. Yeah. So they don't go into the cookies. So I don't have that. I'd actually go outside the family. to get mine.
That's fantastic. And you don't have any little girls. You just have a bunch of little boys.
Yeah, you know, and my really before, you know, I guess in I don't know, in school there were some girls were Girl Scouts, I guess. I don't really remember. But watching the movie, and I want to say, Troop Beverly Hills. Remember that movie with... With Shelley Long. And, you know, they were the Wilderness Girls. They were. Yes. They always had a comp. They had a competition for selling cookies. And that was my, really where I first realized that there was a whole, you know, Girl Scout type thing going on. And like, yeah. And, you know, somebody would tell me, yeah, it's just like Girl Scouts. I'm like, okay, good.
Wow. Yeah, that's great.
And they're very cutthroat.
No, that's absolutely great. And I'm glad that you brought that up. I'm glad that you're talking about the Boy Scouts, because now we can get to what Selena excited about. Since I'm very excited about things that deal with gender. Besides my engagement, which was like such a big deal. Everyone's talking about it online. I wanted to talk about a podcast, Russ.
This Whoa. Is Friday Valley.
I know. I'm really excited about podcast. It relates so much to this episode. Maybe I've asked you this before, but do you listen to the How Stuff Works podcast?
I will listen to one once in a while. I don't, as I have time. It's not one of my normal ones.
Right. Okay. Well, it's one of their podcasts is definitely one of my normal ones. Because they have these great episodes, like Stuff You Missed in History Class, Stuff You Should Know, and then my personal favorite, Stuff Mom Never Told You. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't know. You should probably listen to this episode I'm about to give a shout out to. They did an entire episode on the Girl Scouts, and it's actually like, it's about it's almost 2 years old now. It's one of their first episodes from February 25th, 2009, and it's called How the Girl Scouts Work. And it's about 20 minutes long, and I've listened to this several times, and I've learned so much about the Girl Scouts and about cookies and about the history of them. And so I just wanted to give some kind of fun facts before we get into these recipes, because, I mean, recipes are as interesting as the context that sometimes, like, creates them. And so, Russ, in 1922... an article was published in the American Girl magazine, which is the official Girl Scout publication, explaining how you can make cookies for a profit. So it wasn't until 1922 that these cookies became kind of like this idea amongst troops as a fundraising technique. And so this is how it worked. Like, Girl Scouts were pretty savvy early on, because I think from what Kristen and Molly, the two hosts, said, the recipe yielded 6 or 7 dozen cookies, and it cost 25 cents to make 6 or 7 dozen cookies in 1922. But the Girl Scouts would make them, and then they'd sell them for 25 cents a dozen.
It's interesting, the American Girl thing, because there's is American Girl, isn't that like a big
it's
thing?
It's a big, like, cultural, it's like a big doll company.
Yeah, that's interesting. It was way back in, that's the name of their, their newsletter. But, yeah. You know what, when we have a garage sale around here, and that's once every couple of years, I guess, you know, get rid of the kids' old stuff, and rather than just giving it away, we'll do a little garage sale first. And the kids always ask me, can I sell lemonade? Like, yeah, you can sell lemonade. That's fine. And I go, how about we sell cookies too? And they, yeah, cookies. And so I will spend, you know, hours the night before baking dozens of cookies, and I always make them very small, and, they're like maybe a tablespoon size.
Good.
You know, and so regular batch that my wife would make maybe, you know, 2 dozen cookies. I don't know what the actual makes. I'll make 6 dozen cookies out of one batch.
Oh, like real portion sizes. Good.
Well, yes. And it's, they're tiny little cookies, and I'll make sugar. I'll make, chocolate chip. And then the kids sell them like a quarter a piece, or 4 for $1, or
oh my gosh,
or 2 for I can't remember now. I can't remember how it is, but at one time the kids, you know, I spent $1.50 on ingredients, say for sugar cookies, maybe $2.25 for chocolate chip, and the kids made about $60 selling cookies.
This is amazing.
You know, so and again, they're just cute little kindergartners, first graders. Would you like to buy some cookies and some lemonade? Of course. Of course. Who's not going to buy cookies and lemonade from Cute
Russ,
Little Kid?
Russ, that is genius. That is genius. The next, I'm having a garage sale in a couple months. I'm going to hire some little kids to sell some cookies and lemonade in my front yard and then give me the profit. I'll be like, here, you take $10.
Yeah, you know, it's good. It's a good deal for everybody.
That's amazing. Okay, well, apparently this is just proof that this little Girl Scout profit scheme is completely relevant today, especially when you include five-year-olds. Yeah, it's like a little scheme. Like, that's an incredible profit margin. And honestly, that's what the Girl Scouts were doing in 1922. And so this became a huge trend. Like, the 20s was really a really big time for this. And it wasn't until 1934 that if the very first Girl Scout troop in Philadelphia, or one of them in Philadelphia, decided to start selling cookies from a bakery and not homemade. So it wasn't until the 30s that these cookies that you could buy, like pretty much the cookies we eat today and we're going to talk about in this episode, you could buy them homemade from Girl Scouts all over America. And it wasn't until the 30s that they started being manufactured for the first time, which is interesting.
Yeah, that's, you know, I mean, obviously they can make a lot more cookies, and there's, you know, they can make them around the clock of, you know, three shifts and make a lot more cookies and a lot more money for their programs.
Yeah, definitely a lot more money, because today about 12 to 17% of cookie sales go to local troops to help pay for trips and going to camps and such. So, I mean, we like to think like they're selling all these cookies. If 100% went to the troops, that would be astounding. But you know, you do have to pay for that like commodification process of like getting them from the bakery to the actual Girl Scouts. But still, 12 to 17%, Russ, that's a huge profit margin for the Girl Scouts.
Right, and they can focus on the selling and not baking and, you know, being in the kitchen.
Exactly.
And though they should have those skills, though.
They should. And yeah, they actually, I think they do develop those skills. I mean, I never did do Girl Scouts because my mom actually, she took major issue with me selling cookies. And this is actually kind of a huge debate. And I'm sure you've encountered it a little bit because you have kids who sell popcorn and nuts. It becomes like, it's kind of like, I don't know, parents sometimes take issue with their children going door to door trying to sell stuff.
Yeah, you know, when I was a kid, it wasn't really a big deal. You know, we tried to, I don't know. I have a little issue with it because I get kids at my door trying to sell me magazines. Say if it's like a Friday afternoon here or Friday morning and a door rings and there's a kid saying, yeah, I'm trying to get raise money to go to this camp. I'm like, why aren't you in school?
You know,
number one, so they're lying to me, number one. But two, you know, door to door, I don't know that that's the best way to do things anymore. And, you know, it's interesting, if you want to sell popcorn with the Boy Scouts, you can sign up instead of selling to like to your friends and, you know, going door to door and asking them, at, you know, ambushing them at a party. You can actually have a website and sell popcorn through the website, which is genius. And say you could, you know, post to your Facebook or your Twitter and say, hey, you know, help out the local Boy Scouts here and buy some cookies or not cookies, but popcorn and nuts online.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Which is great.
Russ.
I mean, I think that's going to be the next step. I mean, I think that having kids sit out in front of the of a bank or your local grocery store is probably not the best, not the best way to spend a Saturday. They could be doing something more productive.
Yeah, I'm so glad. Yeah, this is so great. Like, I mean, you and I are a good bit of age. Like, our age difference is pretty significant. So it's nice to hear, like, the parental perspective on Girl Scouts. Whereas I'm, like, in my 20s and I'm just like, cookies are good. So the Girl Scouts are fascinating, and I'm glad we've actually talked about them for a second, because it's just interesting to think about the kind of cultural perspective on these little girls that are selling cookies and how they sell them and why they sell them. And actually, another fun fact about the Girl Scouts, there was a time when they didn't sell cookies, Russ.
During
World War II, because the food shortages were so high, they sold calendars instead.
Oh, what was on the calendars?
I have no idea. Probably pictures of Girl Scouts. I really don't know. This is just a fun fact that I heard over at the Stuff Mom Never Told You podcast. And like, honestly, I'm so enthusiastic about this podcast, Russ. It's one of my favorites. They were actually really, really nice and gave me a shout out in one episode because I write to them all the time. I sent them actually like a care package of brownies and stuff, because in one episode, one of the hosts made the mistake of saying, listeners, send us brownies. Where are our brownies? I was like, psh, I'll send you brownies in a heartbeat.
Here come the brownies.
Yeah, and I know exactly. Like, I thought about, at one point, I thought about sending you and Jeff, like, some hummus or something and being like, here, hummus from Homemade is Best. I'm not creepy at all. If for a food and fitness podcast, it doesn't make much sense. But for, like, something like this, they were talking about brownies. It was totally cute. And they mentioned Clearly Delicious in one episode. And it was super awesome. So, yeah. So, anyway, so I just want to, I'm super excited about Stuff Mom Never Told You. They do such great stuff, do great episodes about like gender and women and stuff like that. So anyway, so I'm excited about that. But there are two other things I'm excited about, Russ.
Well, good.
I'm going to get to them quickly. One will bring us full circle to Girl Scouts. The other, not so much. I recently had a big brunch at my house to celebrate spring. And one of my foodie friends...
Before you go, to celebrate spring, you had a brunch. I like that about you. Because it's like, there's no other reason. Like, hey, it's springtime. Let's celebrate with a brunch. That's great.
It's I'm always looking for an excuse to throw some kind of like food event. Like for instance, when Kate Middleton and Prince William get married next month, I'm throwing an English tea at my house. Like, I mean, it's just this is the way my brain works. We had this big brunch and I made a big deal about it, and about 15 or 20 people came. And my friend Michael Agin, who is from New Orleans, or he lives in New Orleans now, and he has a lot of recipes that have contributed over at Clearly Delicious. He was like, okay, I'm going to hook you up with the best waffles ever. And he's like, I'm going to bring my Belgian waffle maker. We are going to do this up right. And he shows up at my house with so much stuff, like four different kinds of syrup. We're both from New England originally. He's from New Hampshire. I'm from Maine. And so I have all my fancy Maine syrups. He has all his fancy New Hampshire syrups. And he pulls out these waffle mixes. And normally I make everything from scratch because, you know, homemade is best. But he showed me these incredible flavors of waffle mix. Two that caught my eye. One was a coconut waffle mix. And then one was a double chocolate waffle mix. And we're going to put a link to this in the show notes. They're from stonewallkitchen.com. And these are the waffle mixes that you often see at like Williams Sonoma. And they run anywhere from $6.50 to $10.95, depending on the size and depending on the flavor. So yeah, so they're great. And you'd think like, oh, whatever, it's pre-made like chocolate waffle mix, whatever, it's not that good. These are incredible. I can't tell you how good these are, Russ. I could not stop eating the coconut waffle one. Didn't even need syrup. I just like ate it like it was toast. It was unreal, Russ.
Well, I'm looking at it, the double chocolate one, and those look amazing. You know, one thing always look good on the package. I mean, but it's nice to know that something that you buy would taste as good as it looks.
Yeah, it's really great. And I think we need to do an episode in the near future on just like breakfast foods. But this was one of the best breakfast foods that are just pre-made that I've ever had. And they're completely worth it. They're a little pricey. But I mean, if you're just like cooking up breakfast real quick for you and like a loved one, they're incredible. And so I remember we had four kinds of waffles, eight kinds of syrup. And I think we made like 20 waffles just like instantly. And like they were gone. Like they were just so popular.
Well, you know what? Those now I know my my waffle maker recently kicked the bucket, and so we are without a waffle maker right now. And the kids are like, "Can we have waffles?" I'm like, "No, I got to find a good one." I've been kind of spoiled. My father-in-law bought one of those kind of commercial units where you can it makes Belgian waffles, and you turn it over, and the little light goes off, and you turn it back over again, and it's done. Like something you might find.
Great.
At like a hotel, like in their, you know, their breakfast bar, you might have one of these.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
He bought one of those and it works so well and it makes the best waffles. I don't want to, and I'm thinking like, okay, I'm going to buy one of those, but it was pricey and I'm.
Those run you. I mean, honestly, well, actually I just did a quick Google search for you and I found some good ones that run about $37, which is kind of cheap. Yeah. The one that your father-in-law probably bought, was probably $60 or $70. But this is like, I think I found one for $30. So I'll send you the link, Russ.
You know what? If it's only even the $60 or $70, I remember the one he bought was from Costco. And I think it was a little even pricier than that.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay.
So, I mean, it takes two hands to move it into the house.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Cause we have had a brunch like that and he's brought it over and we've made waffles and, for everybody. And, you know, it just, there's a, you know, whenever there's you go to the hotel, if you don't get up early, there's a giant line because everybody wants one of these lovely waffles. But even better, I mean, double chocolate or I'm looking here at the toasted coconut one.
That's the one, the toasted coconut one. That's the one that, like, once you make it, you don't even need syrup for it, Russ. You can just eat it like it's toast. It's unreal good.
I may bring this around to back to Girl Scout cookies quicker than you thought.
Girl Scout cookies. Sorry. All right.
Double chocolate waffle, coconut waffle, some kind of caramel syrup.
Oh, my God. Tastes like a Samoa.
Exactly.
Russ, that was very smooth.
Anyway, you had another item here that you want to talk about.
Yeah. You know how enthusiastic I am about blogging in general. And this is a blog that I've mentioned a couple times. It's Garrett McCord's food and cooking blog called Vanilla Garlic. And he wrote the funniest, best essay about his experience with the Girl Scouts. And, you know, we all have our own little Girl Scout cookie buying, selling experience that we can kind of rely on. His takes the cake, Russ. Apparently it's called Only You Can Save Girl Scouts, parentheses, from monsters. And so he lives in California too, but I think he lives maybe in the Sacramento area. And he just like posted this conversation that he and a Girl Scout had. And I won't read you all of it, but when it came down to the moment in which she wanted him to buy her cookies and she really wouldn't let up. And he's trying not to buy cookies because he's already bought cookies. He's already eaten an entire box the day before. He's trying not to do the same thing. And she stops and yells, "You have to buy these cookies." And he says, "Why is that?" And she says, "If you don't, some giant tentacle monster will rip open the sky and devour me. The $4 in your pocket are the only sacrifice I can offer that will keep me safe." Quiet pause. Wow. Here's your $4. Give me some thimbles. It's great. So we're going to put a link to this post in the show notes because he actually had a friend draw a picture of, and it's like, I guess it's like an actual like cartoonist because it's a really great image.
It's a great picture.
It's a great picture of a tentacle monster trying to attack a Girl Scout. It's like, it's great. It's just great. So how do we make these Thin Mints, huh?
So let's get into the recipes.
Yes.
And are we going to start with Thin Mints? Should we start with our favorites?
I mean, Samoas. Let's start with Samoas.
Okay. Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, great. Not much of a fight there. So, Russ, have you ever made Samoas?
No, I didn't even know. Never even thought about making those at home. That's something that, I mean, they seem so, I don't know.
Perfect.
They're so perfect. Like, how can I make that in my
own kitchen? Honestly, there are multiple steps in making this cookie, but they're very easy. They're very easy to make. Anyone can make them at home, but you just have to make sure that you can dedicate the time in the kitchen to get the recipe right. So I'll give you a rundown on the recipe, Russ. And this is something that you'll notice through all the recipes. There are some very basic steps that repeat themselves in these Girl Scout cookies, because what makes a Girl Scout cookie great is they don't really sell chocolate chip, right? It's not just a cookie that you mix together, you put on a pan, you bake it, and then you serve it. It's something that is layered. I think that's really what makes them great. Or they're very, very basic. They're like a sugar cookie wafer. So it's one of two things. It's either going to be a really basic cookie or a complicated cookie like a Samoa or a Thin Mint cookie. So this Samoa recipe is great. Basically, what it asks you to do is to make a really simple sugar cookie wafer, and then you freeze it or refrigerate it for about 15 minutes so the dough can stiffen up. You cut out little circular rounds, and then you press holes in the center so you can have that little perfect like see-through in the cookie. Because when I think of a Samoa, Russ, I think it always has to have that like circle cut out in the middle.
Right. It's kind of like a small little donut. And that's
like a small little donut.
Is there an easy way to get that little circular, in it?
Well, actually, this is so funny. People who write about making Samoas, no one seems to really have a good way to do it, but I think I figured out a great way to do it. So what you're going to do is, this is great and very un-Girl Scout-like, the way that I made these cookies. but I'm looking for the perfect size, because how big do you consider a Samoa? Like, how big would you say it is?
It's probably an inch and a half.
Inch and a half.
On the outside.
So you know what cookie is going to be device in your kitchen is going to be perfect for cutting out those circular rounds?
I would probably use like one of the kids' drink cups, like a little kid cup. That would be my closest thing I would have, and it'd probably be
that would
big.
Work. Well, you know what? How about an upturned vodka glass?
Oh.
They're like the perfect size for like the Samoas. So I was using a vodka glass as my food stamp. Like I was, so as my cookie cutter. So I just turn, and you can do the same thing with like a champagne glass. This, the mouth of the champagne glass or the mouth of a vodka glass are just the exact size of a Samoa.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So yeah. We're talking, it's even, they're going to expand. So those are, I think those are kind of, those are pretty small.
Those are pretty small. Well, I mean, we're trying to replicate the Samoa as much as possible at home, like the ones in the package, and they're not that big in the package.
Yeah, no, they're not really that big.
So, I mean, in an ideal world, I would like my Samoas to be as big as possible, but if we're going to make them look like the ones in the package, you can use the mouth of a champagne glass or a vodka glass. But if you want them to be bigger, you know, a kid's cup would be great. Or, like, if you really do want them bigger, you could use a small biscuit cutter.
Right, a little biscuit cutter. And I was thinking you could probably use an apple corer for the center.
You could use an apple corer, but I have something that's even faster and easier.
Oh, good.
So you cut these – so basically just, you know, punch out all of your circular rounds, transfer them to a greased cooking sheet, and then find – this is crazy – find a cork in your kitchen.
A cork?
I have lots of corks in my kitchen because I have tons of infused olive oils and balsamic vinegars. And you take a cork and you just press it into the center of the dough and then swirl it around a little bit. And it's going to...
It just spreads it out. It pushes it into the outside of the cookie, out of the center.
Exactly. It's going to push it from the center to the sides, make the cookie a little bit bigger. And it's just going to give you control of a perfect size circle in the middle.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's that way you don't have the little extra little circles you have to take out or deal with them or put them back in and roll them out again. And
exactly. Okay. This technique is so easy. And I took a picture of it. It'll be on How I Did It, and it'll be on Clearly Delicious this week. So it's just super easy, and you don't waste any cookie dough, which is great.
Well, no, that would be horrible to waste.
Yeah. So don't waste it.
All right. So that's it. We're making the base cookie. Now, how do we? It's just like kind of a sugar cookie, kind of a...
It's just a really basic sugar cookie. It has flour, baking powder, salt, butter, sugar, vanilla extract, and milk in it. There are no eggs. So this is just basically like... it's just like a basic sugar cookie wafer. So it's like the kind that you get in those big tins, like the shortbread cookies. It's almost... It resembles that in construction and ingredients very much. So that's what the cookie is. And you just put it on a baking sheet and bake it until golden brown. For me, it can be anywhere from 10 to 15 minutes. For me, it took about 13 minutes for where it was golden on bottom and cooked all the way through.
Good. Now, we want a certain thickness when onto the dough?
Really, you just want it to be about, I think, a quarter of an inch thick.
It's pretty thick.
Yeah, it's pretty thick, but it's going to spread out and expand and bubble up a little bit in the oven. So, I mean, it actually is surprisingly thin when you look at it. But less than a quarter of an inch is good. The issue is you're going to be putting so much on this cookie. It's going to be doused in caramel, coconut, and chocolate sauce. So it needs to be structurally capable of handling all the stuff you're going to be doing to it.
Yeah, so we don't want it to be too thin where it soaks it up and just breaks apart.
Yeah, exactly. Like a thin, I did this with like, some of them came out too thin and they just broke apart. Like, so you want them to be at least thick enough to handle all the stuff you're adding.
Well, good. Now, how do we get that Samoa taste? How do we add the stuff on top?
Well, okay. So future Russ, this is you doing this in your kitchen. You've baked all your cookies. They're cooling on the counter. The kids are running around. You're going to want to make a caramel sauce that has toasted shredded golden coconut in it. And the caramel sauce, this is really the hardest part. The coconut, basically it calls for 3 cups of coconut. You're going to keep your oven preheated, spray down another baking sheet, put the 3 cups of coconut on that baking sheet and toast it for about 20 minutes. Every 5 minutes, you'll need to take a spatula and move it around so that the coconut doesn't burn and then it just gets golden all over. So just toast the coconut in the oven. And while you're toasting the coconut in the oven, you can either make a caramel sauce or melt down 12 ounces of what we have here as good quality chewy caramels unwrapped. So you know you can buy like those caramel chews at the store. You unwrap them and melt them down. And you'll add milk and salt to that.
Okay, so we're just going to thin it out a little bit.
Yeah, we're going to thin it out. And we're going to take...
Maybe make a little less. Maybe does that salt make it? I always heard this. Now maybe this is kind of getting off. But adding a little bit of salt, does that make it sweeter? I've always heard that. Like, and a little bit of salt makes it actually sweeter. Is that the case?
You know, Alton Brown would have a great answer for this, but I do know that adding salt to a recipe makes the sugar more potent. Like, you can taste it more because of the balance of salty and sweet. So instead of tasting that salt, it just makes the sugar pop. So yeah. I think that what you're saying is true. And it's like a fourth of a teaspoon. It's very minor.
Oh, just a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit, but it always helps. But I do want to stop and talk about caramel sauce for a second, because another recipe that will be up on Clearly Delicious this week is how to make your own caramel sauce at home. And it's super, super easy, Russ.
Well, you know, I did make my Bananas Foster recipe.
Yes.
I made this a couple days ago. And, you know, you had mentioned, I didn't know that this was actually a caramel sauce, but making that Bananas Foster, I just use brown sugar and butter.
Yes.
And then they want you to put in rum and other things and banana liquor to make the Bananas Foster, but is it similar?
It's very similar, only this one is just like a basic caramel sauce. Really, what makes a caramel sauce, what you're talking about is a caramel sauce with lots of zazazu. It's got lots of extra stuff in it that makes it really flavorful. This is a basic caramel sauce, and what makes it a caramel sauce is the fact that you take regular sugar and you get it so hot that it naturally browns itself.
Oh.
And you get it so, and I'll put a link to this in the show notes for the recipe that I'm using, but you take about a cup of sugar, add it to a very hot saucepan, don't add anything to that saucepan, turn it up to medium high heat, be very careful. Like, I always wear like gloves that cover my arms on both hands while I'm doing it, because hot boiling sugar, the sugar is going to get higher than like boiling water. Like, it's going to be so hot. And so you just like, you wait until that sugar naturally melts down. It'll just, by getting sugar in contact with heat, it'll start melting down and it'll start turning a dark amber color. And so you whisk it aggressively this entire time until it becomes thoroughly, like it becomes an entire liquid and it becomes a dark amber liquid. And so you turn off the heat and then you add 6 tablespoons of butter and a half cup of heavy cream, both of which need to be room temperature instantly, and then whip that in there, and that's the caramel sauce.
Wow. That sounds exciting and scary at the same time to do that.
It is very scary. Do you ever watch that show Ace of Cakes by any chance?
I have watched that before, yeah.
Okay. I'm addicted to the show. It's one of my favorites. And it's like my fantasy world. Like, if I weren't a PhD grad student, I hope I'd be working at that bakery. It's in the show, they often talk about making like ice skating rinks on cakes, like faux glass, like where something looks like it's frozen water or faux glass.
Yeah.
And they always melt down sugar. But they always make such a big deal of it in the show, because melted sugar is so unbelievably hot. It's hotter than boiling water. It's like insanely hot. And then on top of it, it's sticky. So if you get it on your finger, it's like,
oh, yeah,
getting it off is like a nightmare. So it is dangerous. This is definitely like, if we had to put all the steps in the show into levels, this would be the highest level of like cooking skill that you would need. Just because it's like it's something that needs to be done super carefully. But this is one option for caramel sauce, and I used it for this cookie recipe and it tasted amazing.
Okay, well, but going back, it's okay to go get those little cubes of caramel and just melt those down.
Yeah, that's basically like, if we have, exactly, we'll probably have like so many listeners that are like beginner A cooks, and then so many listeners that are like, you know, out of this world. So for the ones that are really experimental and want to make their own stuff from scratch, do that recipe and we'll put it in the show notes. But for those of you at home who just want something super fast and easy, go get a 12-ounce package of caramel chews, unwrap them, and melt them in a saucepan with milk. And we'll have that recipe in the show notes too.
Good. Okay, so we're mixing it. We've got our toasted coconut now. We've got our caramel sauce.
Yes.
And just an aside again, caramel or caramel, which one are you?
It depends, and I will not go on a rant about this, Russ, because I actually know a lot about the way in which we say things based on words that are syntactically next to each other in our sentences. So some people will say caramel based on the vowel sounds and the consonants that come before and after it, and some people will say caramel based on the vowel sounds and the consonants that come before and after it.
So it's not a.
Do you like how I just geeked out on you?
But you know, because caramel is where my wife's uncle lives, and caramel is what you eat, and for me, you know.
Yes.
But people say caramel apple all the time. You know, that as a thing, and I don't ever, you know, correct them, or because I've heard it both ways, and who am I to say which way you can say it?
Right. I often just say caramel because I'm from the north and we say everything like a hard A. Like so maybe it's also a regional pronunciation.
I think so. Yeah. Where you grew up and how, you know, your parents said it. Would you like a caramel apple or would you like a caramel apple?
Exactly.
And it taints you for life.
It follows you throughout life and you end up at like dinner parties having weird fights with people you don't know over pronunciation.
And you end up asking for horse duvers before your dinner.
That is a really good way to remember how to spell it. So caramel sauce. And basically what you do, you take that toasted coconut and you add it to the caramel sauce and you mix it up really, 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 really nicely. And then you just dip your cookies in the caramel sauce and then put them back on your rack and allow them to dry.
So that caramel was pretty sticky.
Yeah, extraordinarily sticky. And I used this is the trickiest part. Like, these cookies are so good, but it takes serious effort to get them right. And so you dip them in the caramel sauce that already has coconut in it, and you just lay them out on a rack to dry. Meanwhile, you got to get those dark chocolate stripes on there, right?
Okay, before that, though, do we dip the whole cookie, like both sides in the coconut mixture?
The way I was doing it, I was like dipping the face in.
So you just kind of like take the face, kind of turn it a little bit and then pull it out.
Is that exactly. Okay. And I mean, parts of the bottom will get covered in some of the mixture, but
sure.
You want the mixture on top. And then there's another, that's one way of doing it. It's the way I did it because I had these tongs that I was using. But a lot of people will take the cookies on their counter, and this is sometimes easier, and just take a large spoon and just spoon them on top of the cookies. And naturally, the coconut caramel topping will just cling to the cookie and you'll still have that hole in the middle. It won't cover it completely. It'll just run through. But that's just, you just have to be careful with how much you put on there so you can retain that like circle in the middle.
Okay.
Yeah. So
pour it on there. The chocolate ribbons now.
The chocolate ribbon. So just like when you're frosting a cake, you can't add these chocolate ribbons until after this has dried. So this really is a long process, Russ. Like you bake the cookies, they cook like for 13 to 15 minutes. They cool. That's another like 20 minutes. You make the sauce. That's another like 30 minutes. And then finally, you want to get those perfect, beautiful, dark chocolate ribbons on top. And so according to this recipe, which is actually available over at I don't even know how to say this. I think it's Leet's Culinaria. It's another food blog. And you're going to take 8 to 12 ounces of dark chocolate, semi-sweet chocolate, and melt it in a saucepan. She doesn't really give you very specific instructions on how to melt it in the saucepan. She does say that you can break it up into pieces, put it in a microwave-safe bowl, power it for 45 seconds, stir, repeat until it's completely melted down. I like to melt chocolate on my stovetop, so I just add it to a saucepan and add a couple tablespoons of milk and melt it down that way and just stir constantly until it's completely fluid.
Oh, you know what? I'm actually a big fan of heating chocolate in the microwave. When we do fudge during Christmas time.
Yes.
I will always burn the chocolate on the stove if I don't.
Do it right.
And so we've gone to the microwave and we've had perfect fudge ever since.
That's great. Okay. Well, see, that is great for you. And honestly, like when you're a cook, it's all about knowing your own skills in your own kitchen. So for me, like I feel like I have more control and can do it faster if I'm doing it on the stovetop. But for you, I mean, the whole point of using the microwave is so that you don't burn the chocolate. So yeah. So she just says to put the chocolate in a bowl, microwave it for 45 seconds, stir and repeat until it's liquid. So that would be what you'd be doing, Russ, in this like fictional situation.
I'm a fan.
And then you just take like a teaspoon and drizzle it on top and try and do your best with getting those like back and forth black and white stripes or black stripes.
So not adding. So actually, she mentions here dipping the bottoms of the cookie. Now, did you do that on yours too?
I did a little bit. A little bit.
That sounds like it would be a mess too.
That is also a mess. It's because I mean, honestly, like Samoas have the chocolate bottom. That's part of what makes them great.
Right.
But I don't. Such a mess. Like by the time you get to this, honestly, Russ, I love these cookies. They came out incredibly. They didn't last but 2 seconds when I gave them out to people. But it's just once you get to this stage, you're going to have been in the kitchen for easily 2 hours. And you're like, do I really?
I'm done.
Yeah, do I really want to dip these in the chocolate? There's already, like, you're covered in chocolate already. You're covered in coconut. You're covered in caramel sauce. Your hair's probably a little bit fried. This really is, like, truly, I mean, these cookies look so simple and unassuming, but this is one of the more intense cookie recipes I have ever made. So honestly, like, homemade is best. These taste incredible. But when you buy them for $4 from a Girl Scout, like, they have done so much amazing work for you. Like, you're not even, you're getting every dollar's worth. Like, this is just incredible.
It takes, like, 10 seconds to buy a box of cookies.
Exactly. This takes, like, this recipe, Russ, takes about 2 hours.
Yeah. So how many cookies does this recipe make? I mean, how many we're
talking? For her, it yielded about 3.5 to 4 dozen. I think okay. She made hers really small. Me, it yielded about 3 dozen because I made mine a little bit bigger. Okay. So, I mean, this recipe is great. The cookies are great. They're, like, incredible. They're so, 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 so good. But you really have to be one of those dedicated people who are like, I'm going to spend an afternoon making cookies.
Yeah, and you know what? You might be, it's like, I wouldn't be at all motivated because I could probably still go get some Samoas right now. But right around, I don't know, October?
Yes.
You know, November, I might be like, oh, what about Samoas for Christmas?
That sounds delicious.
See? You know, people always, you know, do the Christmas cookies, but why not Samoas for Christmas? It's a new thing.
Oh, no, I think you should do the Girl Scout cookies for Christmas and
trademark
everyone look at you
Penny.
Like, yeah, trademark Russ Turley. Girl Scouts, you ain't got nothing on this. So, yeah, no, I think you should do it, Russ. Do you think you'll actually make this recipe with your kids?
I would probably get them involved in one or two steps. Like, I wouldn't get them involved probably in the, well, if, you know, just doing the caramels, just getting the chewy caramels, they could probably, that'd be no problem. And doing the, okay. But you know, and mixing, they're into mixing.
Okay, good. Yeah.
They always get involved in mixing but you know, actually baking and getting them out and getting them off the pan. We don't, you know, anything that involves high heat, you know,
yes.
We're dealing with the oven. We tend not to get them
yes.
involved in that part.
Okay, good. Well, that's good. I mean, you know, they can learn so much just from the mixing process itself. I mean, that's how my mom taught me how to cook initially.
Right. And, you know, and if I do make my own caramel sauce, then that would be off limits.
Yeah, total off limits. And I mean, you know, I mean, Russ, this is why it's so great that we do this podcast together, because you're talking about how you would make these cookies in a family environment with children running around and safety and all this other stuff going on. I live by myself. I'm a woman in her 20s. And the worst thing I'm concerned of is that my dog's going to find the cookies on the counter and eat them, you know? So, I mean, I can make my caramel sauce by myself. But I mean, you know, if speed and efficiency and just doing it the fast, like, way for your kids, definitely go with those caramel cubes and get them involved in the mixing. That sounds great.
Yes. So, you know, let's go to, because there's lots more cookies that the Girl Scouts make.
Oh my gosh.
And you've got some great links here. One that includes, like, all of the recipes. But,
all of the recipes.
But we're just going to highlight a couple here. So let's go with the, you've got one here highlighted, trefoils. I don't even know what those are. Are those?
Oh, I think they're pronounced, are they trefoils or trefoils? Like, I don't know how they're pronounced. Are they trefoils? Trefoils?
I don't know. Trefoils sounds like something you'd see in the forest.
I know. This is a foil on a tree. Girl Scouts, cut them down.
I don't know.
I know. The image is here. You know, I don't know how they're pronounced. Maybe a listener can write in and, like, tell us that we're butchering all these names. But these are really basic. This is the cookie. This is the lemon butter cookie that tastes like, it's basically like a lemon flavored shortbread cookie. That's for the person who does not want to spend 2 hours in the kitchen. They want to spend 30 minutes in the kitchen. This is such an easy recipe to make. It's basically the same recipe with some that we just talked about for that wafer, but with some variances in proportion size, and you add lemon zest and a little bit of ginger, and ooh. you make the batter, you refrigerate it, and actually you refrigerate it in the shape of a log, like, you know, when you go to the store and you buy those, like, tubes of cookie dough.
Sure.
And you, like, you just cut off. So at home, you do the same thing. You make the batter, you shape it into a log, wrap it in plastic wrap, refrigerate it, and then wait a certain amount of time. It may be like 20 minutes, 30 minutes. Oh, she says refrigerate for 20 minutes. And then cut it off into the perfect sized circular rounds. So this is a very, very, very easy recipe to make.
Yeah, you know, and seriously, that addition of a little bit of lemon zest, it makes mm-hmm. them just taste so good. Whenever I get these,
yes.
I think, like, oh, just, you know, simple shortbread. Who wants that? You know, give me
yeah.
some chocolate. But you get that little lemon zest, you're like, oh, Just, yes. You know what? A couple of those with a cup of coffee. Like,
yes.
It's just, it's a great little snack. And but unfortunately, like most cookies, say if you got a Girl Scout pack, you get a package, and to eat one is to eat a whole package, which is the,
yeah,
the worst
that's,
part.
That's the worst part. Like, you get those Girl Scout cookies, and you just want to eat the whole thing.
Yeah.
So
you have to open them up, take two, go sit down, close them up, put them back in the cabinet behind something else, and then go eat them. And then you're like, well, I have to go again and get up again and go. Because make it a to-do to go get more cookies.
Right. Exactly. That's such a good – I'm so glad that we need to have like the 10 ways not to eat the whole package like list. Because I just – honestly – and I feel like making them at home makes you less likely to eat the whole thing too. Because honestly, like when you make them at home, you just spent 2.5 hours making Samoas or something. You're not going to want to just sit there and shove Samoas in your mouth. You're so tired of smelling caramel and chocolate that the people you give them to are going to have the Girl Scout cookie effect. But you're not so much, I think. At least I didn't.
Well, and then you also spend 2 hours, you know, baking, and you don't like, I'm going to make it last more than, you know, 15 minutes.
Exactly. Yeah. And this one, I mean, this recipe, I think for these trefoils, I think it maybe takes less than an hour easily between the refrigerating, the mixing and the cooking and the cooling. It easily takes less than an hour.
Yeah. This is something that, yeah, these are easy to do. I've done something similar to these at home here. And, I don't think I ever put any lemon zest in them, though.
Oh, really? Okay.
No. Oh, I definitely didn't put any ginger in them.
Okay. Yeah, the ginger is just a pinch of ginger. It's something that you want, like, it's like on the back of the palate, like a super taster might taste the ginger, but it's just something that's going to help, it's just going to work with the lemon zest to make it a special kind of shortbread cookie. So it's good.
Well, good. And now I know everybody's like, so if you found our show on iTunes or you searched for Thin Mints, you may see some people, there's going to be a large number of people looking for Samoas. That's cool.
But yes.
By far, the most popular Girl Scout cookie in the world has got to be the Thin Mint.
Exactly. It's almost like it's almost like a political party. You're either a Samoas person or you're a Thin Mint.
You know
person.
What? That's a debate and I can get behind. It's worthy of talk.
Well, let's talk about that, Ross. Maybe we could even title this episode "Some Girl Scout Cookies: colon, Samoas or Thin Mints." And I bet you that we would probably get so many emails on this.
Oh, I can put a little poll in the show notes. Are you a Thin Mints person or a Samoas person?
Oh my God, do it, Ross. We have to do this. Okay, so let's talk about Thin Mints. What are your thoughts on Thin Mints?
My thoughts on Thin Mints, I don't like them.
You don't like them?
You know what?
What?
I like chocolate. I like mint. But you know what? They're too minty. I don't like them. I do like them. They are fine. When my wife buys the Thin Mint ice cream, I have a little taste of that. It's the correct combination of correct proportions of chocolate and mint.
Yes.
But they're just a little bit too minty.
See, okay, so it's so interesting that you say that. Maybe you're a super taster. Maybe you're more of a super taster because I had Thin Mints like a couple weeks ago, the evening of the Samoa's engagement, and I remember thinking, these aren't that minty. They're like not that great. So I like them, don't get me wrong. I actually think the homemade ones taste better than the Girl Scout ones. Shock, blasphemy. But but honestly, like I don't think they're that minty. But this is what's great, Russ. Like if you were to make this cookie at home, you have complete control over how much mint goes into the chocolate batter.
Well, yes, that's the thing. I'm extremely excited about this one because I can actually – yeah, because I like a chocolate cookie, you know. But,
yes.
And just a hint of mint would be good. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, you know there's two things. If I had a peppermint patty, you know, it's all mint with a mm-hmm. little bit of chocolate. I'm into that. That's fine.
Yes.
But when it's supposed to be a chocolate cookie with mint, I just want a hint of mint. I don't want a whole bunch of mint. And this part right here where my wife's going to be very excited because I'm thinking about this is the one. I have free time today. You know,
so you're going to make this.
I'm thinking I'm going to make Thin Mints for my wife tonight.
Oh my gosh. Well, it's like, she'll be like, what did you do wrong? Making up for something? Did you hurt the car? Did you break the car? What's wrong? Where's our child? Where are our children? This is awesome. No, this is great. Well, then let's talk about this recipe, because I could have very easily cross-listed the Thin Mint recipe available over at the article that we're going to have on our show notes called Girl Scout Cookies Year-Round! 9 Copycat Recipes That You'll Love. They actually have two different kinds of Thin Mint recipes, and they're good, but I found one that has had a stellar online following. Like, so many people have made this. The one that I'm listening to only has 18 reviews, but it's just like another one that has like 1,000 reviews. And this is a really special cookie, and I'm going to tell you why. You don't use regular flour. You use a fudge cake mix combined with cake flour.
Oh, yes.
It's super gluttonous, and it gives you this incredible chocolate wafer. So most people think Thin Mints, like, you can bite into it and you're going to see a bit of a vanilla, like, striping. Like, you'll see that there were layers of vanilla cookie. But with this one, this chocolate cookie is incredible. So basically, you just take a basic fudge cake mix recipe, mix it with 3 tablespoons of shortening, 1/2 cup of cake flour, an egg, 3 tablespoons of water, and just mix it together. And it gives you this incredible cookie dough recipe.
So, you know, I have to ask this, because every time I see a recipe that tells me to sift the flour, I go, really? Do I have to sift the flour?
Oh, God. Okay, so sifting, like, I mean, if you have a sifter in your kitchen, this could take you forever. I hate sifting flour. It's my least favorite thing in the entire world. And there is like a really fast way to cheat and do it. Do you know what that is?
No, I don't. Please.
Okay. So you take your flour, you put it in a bowl, and you take a whisk and you whisk it for a couple minutes.
So we're just separating the molecules, the little pieces of flour, basically.
Yeah. The idea when you sift it, you're funneling it through this grid that's allowing it to separate the molecules, as you say. But it's just like basically forcing the flour to be as fluffy and open and have as much air in it as possible.
Adding air in. Yeah.
Yeah, you're adding air in. So if you like whisk like a bowl of flour for a minute or two, like it does the exact same thing. And you have much more control over it, and it's your hand doesn't cramp up after 2 minutes.
Yes. I've got one of those ones where you put it in and you turn it like, you know, like you're cranking a monkey. What's the guy with the monkey?
The
guy with the monkey. Oh, this sounds stupid now. But you know, like the guy who plays the music and the monkey dances.
Oh, the monkey box. Like the monkey box and something pops up.
No. No, like Jack in the Box. I know.
Yeah, Jack in the Box is what I'm thinking.
There's a guy, he's on a street, and he's got a monkey with a little hat, and he's got a large mustache. He's maybe a gypsy of some kind. And he's playing music on his bah. And anyway, I don't know.
Is there a Girl Scout running around?
There's no Girl Scouts in it. Anyway, I'm sorry. That was,
I have no idea. I hope we get an email and someone says, Russ, what you're thinking about is this.
Okay.
I have no idea. My sifter, you're saying yours has a handle.
Basically, mine has a handle, and you rotate it, and it has a little wire, and you know, the mesh in the bottom, and it as you go through, as you turn the handle, it forces it out. And anyway.
That is, honestly, that's like one of the easier sifters to use, because the sifter I have at home, the sifting device, you basically just like pump the sifter by like you grab hold of the handle and you squeeze in and out really fast.
Yeah, those are the worst. That's the one we used to have, and my wife's like, I'm not ever sifting anything again. This is the worst sifter ever.
It takes forever. Your hand cramps up so hard. So that's when I learned and like Googled about like the whisking technique, and you get the same results.
Okay, well, I'm gonna let her know about that, and then maybe we'll have some more things that need to be sifted.
Exactly.
Baked around here.
Yeah, you can sift like a ninja, like really really fast. So yeah.
Sift like a ninja.
I've got a ninja in your kitchen. So I mean, honestly, this recipe calls for 1/2 cup of cake flour. Like, you can sift 1/2 cup so quickly with whatever device you're using.
Right, that's a very small amount.
It's when you get to like 4 cups of flour.
Four cups of flour sifted, you're like, oh, gosh.
Yeah, you're like, kill me now. This sucks. So basically, that's what makes this recipe so good. You're combining a pre-made batter with cake flour, and then you add egg and water, and just like the other recipes, it needs to be refrigerated, so you have control over the size and shape of your dough. This one says that you need to refrigerate it for 2 hours, though. So it's one of those things, you make it and you return to it later.
Well, yeah, it's interesting, because there's not a lot of, like the other one we had, like a lot of butter. I mean,
yes.
It's kind of defines a shortbread cookie. But this one, it really, it has only 3 tablespoons of shortening. It's not a lot. So it's interesting that you have to have it refrigerate for so long. Maybe that's why it's longer, because it doesn't have as much fat in it.
Exactly. I think that really does have a lot to do with it. And then, so basically, you just preheat your oven to 350. I think we should mention that all these cookies are cooked at 350. And you, let's see, she says, lightly flour surface, roll out a portion of the dough to a 16th of an inch thick. So really thin.
Really thin, yeah.
Really thin. So cut out, and she says, use the lid from a spice container with a 1 1/2 inch diameter. But anything in your kitchen that has a 1 1/2 inch diameter can be used as a cookie cutter for this particular exercise.
Our vodka glass, say.
Or a vodka glass. You know, that's not an inch and a half. That's more like an inch, I think. Well, actually, no, it's not. It's no, it is an inch and a half. You can use a vodka glass.
We have a lot of big vodka glasses around here.
Very large. Triple quadruple shots. and then you cook it for 10 minutes until golden brown and allow to remove from oven and allow to cool completely. So then, like, you can already anticipate what the next step is. You melt down your chocolate. For you, you're going to be using your microwave. I'll use my stovetop. But you melt it down with 6 tablespoons of shortening. So this is where the fat's coming in.
Yeah, there's no butter in this one. It's all shortening. So you're not trying to introduce that butter flavor. You want just plain chocolate flavor.
Right. Do you know why also she's using shortening? Like, can you think of another reason?
At room temperature, it's solid?
It is solid. Exactly. This is the kind of cookie that when it dries, you're going to have a smooth chocolate, like, casing. It's going to look like it was professionally dipped. It's not going to look like something that never properly dried. Because when you have butter in it, it's just, I mean, the outcome can be very, very, like, testy. So the shortening really helps determine how it's going to look. And actually, if you look at all the user photos that have been uploaded here, you can see everyone's recipes came out perfect.
They are all beautiful, and I'm looking at them. And some are they're all different though. Some just kind of spoon the topping on top and look neat. Some are like coated on top and bottom.
Yes.
And there's a lot of them are different shapes too. They've made stars. Well, this one has Christmas shapes.
Yes.
That was cute. And then there's a lot of them are hearts, and they put little candies on top.
Like, yeah, sprinkles.
You know, something, yeah, sprinkles that you would get like at the grocery store, just your basic ones. And some have little lines on them. They're all decorated. So they're all different, which is great.
Yes. Yeah, and this is a great recipe, exactly, because peer-to-peer recipe sharing is like such a wonderful tool. And you can just see from these recipes, you don't just have to use an upturned vodka glass. They don't have to look like the ones in the packages. You can do them for every season. So Russ, this cookie is perfect for next Christmas because people eat tons of like minty things.
Yeah, so a 16th of an inch, though, that seems
super thin.
That seems super thin.
Yeah, it's basically a wafer. Like, that's what they're going for. It's like a crispier wafer, and it does not stay in the oven that long. It stays for 10 minutes, and you might pull it out before that if your edges start to brown.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, so the refrigerating is just to help into rolling it out and to getting the cutouts with the
It's to ensure that you have control over your dough. Almost always why you refrigerate. But also because, like, look at the ingredients. You're using a fudge cake mix. This is meant to be a cake and not meant to be a cookie. So you have to, you have to outsmart what you're doing here. Outsmart the dough.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And then you just, like, melt down the chocolate, add peppermint extract and shortening. And for you, Russ, you're just going to add, it says 3/4 teaspoon of peppermint extract, but you might add 1/2 teaspoon or less. And this is great because I like chocolate and mint stuff a lot, but I have all these different extracts in my cabinet, like orange extract or lemon extract. And I would be very inclined to add like orange extract to this and have like an orange and chocolate mint.
Oh, that would be really good.
Yeah.
No, it's really easy. Nobody else in the house would like that but me, but that would be extremely good.
It would be extremely good. So yeah, so that's how you make these. That's how you make these cookies. They're small and delicious, and they actually have the recipe for this. One cookie, Russ, is 78 calories.
Oh,
right. It's because of all the shortening.
Yeah. Oh gosh.
So this is not the kind of cookie that could be made. Yeah. So this is not the kind of cookie that you can just like have the entire package. Clearly, you cannot have this entire package.
It would be a bad idea.
It would be such a bad idea. And let's see. I think it yields. Where is her yield?
It's going to be a lot.
It's going to yield a lot. Yeah, I think it yields a few dozen, just like the other recipe.
Well, it's a thing. At a whole cake mix and at a 16th of an inch thick, I mean, that's going to be a lot.
Yes.
Just intuitive. It just seems like it'd be a lot more than that, even.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's because you're using that cake fudge mix, like, and also because you're adding lard and more lard and more lard. So this is great. But they're good, but you just can't eat that many of them.
Well, Helena, these are the best, and like I say, I think making those Thin Mints tonight would go. It's going to get me a lot of points.
A lot of points, a lot of attention, a lot of Russ, you're the man. You shall cook for us every single night, make us cookies. Maybe not. That's how I imagine your household conversations go.
They all do that. That's right. Russ, you're the man. You're the dough master.
Good job, Dad. You're so cool. Flay that mignon.
Woo! Yes. That's how they all go.
But. Of course. We're just going to, this is representation of reality. Purely.
Yeah, but you know what? Seriously, though, I will have to make some the trefoils.
Yes.
Also, because my one smaller one that doesn't like chocolate, we'll have to make some other cookies for him as well.
Exactly. But this will be great. Like, I mean, the tree, you know what? I don't even know. It's almost like you could create like a counter organization during your yard sales to like counter the Girl Scouts. Like you can make these cookies at your next yard sale and see what happens, because I guarantee you that $60 could be like $600.
Could you imagine though that people were like, well, can you have a garage sale? Cause we want some cookies, you know, the neighbors.
Yeah, that would go over real well. No, this is great. So, yeah. So, I mean, Russ, I guess we should kind of ask, what are you thinking about making these cookies at home? Like, do you really think that this Homemade Is Best is like, I don't know. This is almost like the Girl Scouts were meant for a Homemade Is Best episode.
Well, yeah. You know, when you mentioned this to me, that you were going to make these Samoas, I mean, I was so excited and had never thought about making Girl Scout cookies at home, like, you know, recreating those recipes.
Yes.
And it seems like, well, I'd say, I know what Samoas, I mean, that is an intricate recipe. I mean, it is a long, usually, you know, you mix it in a bowl, you put it on a plate, on a cookie sheet, and you bake, and you take it out, and you're done. I mean, there's three more steps after that. I mean, there's time in between, you have to cool, and it is an intricate recipe, but
yes. Like
the trefoils, super simple.
Yeah, super, super simple.
The Thin Mints, also, besides cooling for 2 hours, and I need to get that mixed up right away. To you know, super simple, also,
yes.
And yeah. So, like I said, it was just made for homemade cookies.
Yeah, it really was just made for homemade cookies. And I mean, honestly, what's so ironic is that the whole reason why there are Girl Scout cookies today is because historically, these cookies were made at home by little Girl Scouts trying to raise money for their troops in the 20s. So it's kind of amazing. It's like it's coming full circle. It's like making them at home is really the way that these were originally meant to be made. Now they're commercialized. Now it's like this whole industry. But in this sense, it's kind of nice. It's like we're doing the Girl Scout cookies justice.
You know, and I almost guarantee I'm going to put more chocolate coating on my cookies, and I think that's going to make them better.
Because
there's such a thin coating on the Thin Mints, and maybe that's why maybe like a thicker kind of fudge coating.
Yes, yes,
would make them even better.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, definitely. Exactly. Like, I think that's the other thing that's great about making things at home is that you can really make, if you've always liked Thin Mints, but you've never loved them, you can make them at home in a way that makes you love them. And I mean, if you've never liked Samoas, but you have them from home, you might be like, holy cow, this cookie is officially for me, but I don't like the ones in the box, which those people don't exist. But, you know, but if they did, this is probably what they'd say. So I love it. And you can control the mint content and the Thin Mints. I mean, Homemade Is Best on so many ways. Like, it's cheaper, you can have them year round, and you can do whatever you want to the recipe to adapt it to your personal tastes.
Well, I'm excited to see what you came up with, how yours came out on the post.
Yes, I have some great pictures. I'll share them with you later this week when it should post actually tomorrow. The recipe will post tomorrow.
Excellent. And I'm going to I will post pictures on my Facebook of the Thin Mints.
Yay! Good. We really do need to start posting our personal photos, like Russ's kitchen versus Helena's kitchen. The California meets the Louisiana throwdown.
Yes. And there will be the poll I have written down, so I don't forget, for the show notes, the Thin Mints versus Samoa. Make sure you go over to homemadeisbest.com and put your vote in.
Please put your vote in, because those Thin Mint people need to be wiped the floor. We need to wipe the floor of those Thin Mint people.
Exactly.
Samoa people will dominate. And if you're a Thin Mint person, show us wrong. Go over and vote at Homemade Is Best.
Good. Well, I'm not looking at the screen right now, Helena, in preparation for the basic food prep term of the week.
This is test time. Okay, so a couple weeks ago, I think I gave you a hint. I said it would behoove you to know this other word because we were talking about marinating.
Yes.
This week, I want to talk about macerating. So quick, 10 seconds. Really quickly, what is to macerate? How do you do it? Why do you do it?
You know, I think we even mentioned what it was and I forgot.
Russ, come on.
It was something about fruit, I think.
I'll give you a hint. It was, we talked about strawberries.
Oh, geez. I'm afraid I'm going to completely fail.
Are you failing your midterm?
I am.
Okay, just try. Does macerate sound like anything to you?
It sounds like I'm gutting something. I'm thinking eviscerate, though. Yeah, it's just, you know. No.
Let me stop you there.
Let me go. It's going ugly. To macerate?
It is in the same like food technique family as marinate. So basically, you take a food, usually through fruit, almost always fruit. I've never seen macerating anything else. And you turn it from fruit into liquid by infusing it with the liquid's flavor. Basically, you infuse a liquid with the fruit's flavor. And so how you do this is super easy. And the example I'm going to give is like when you're making the strawberries for strawberry shortcake. You cut up like so many cups of strawberries and you destem them and quarter them or whatever. Put them in a bowl. Add, let's say, a quarter of a cup or half cup of sugar. Mix it up and allow it to sit for 10 minutes. Then you take like a potato masher and you mash them down really well and allow them to sit a few more minutes. And then you mash them down again, stir them up. And as you do this process, all of the like the natural sweet fruit liqueur that's in that fruit is going to turn into like a simple syrup. And sometimes you'll see people do this with like a liqueur, like brandy or rum. And so they'll use that as the macerating liquid. You can add that to your strawberries and like a strawberry shortcake. But usually it's really simple ingredients. It's the fruit, sugar, and then some kind of liqueur. You can do it with or without the liqueur because the strawberries are going to release their own natural liquid. So yeah, that's what to macerate is.
Well, I didn't come close.
Aw, you tried. Well,
I barely had even a guess. But you know, that's interesting. And so what would you use a macerated fruit for?
Usually for, for strawberry shortcake. Basically anything, any kind of dessert item in which you want to put like a fruit syrup with the actual fruit in it on something. So I usually do this also on ice cream, like vanilla ice cream. Or you can even put it on pancakes or those waffles we talked about at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah. Well, you know, interesting. I have like taken like cut strawberries and then added some sugar to them and just let them sit and they naturally release juices and you know, it creates kind of a syrup with the strawberries. So the kids can put it on like an angel food cake or with some whipped cream or on top of ice cream.
Exactly.
So, but I haven't added brandy or any kind of, you know, other liqueur to it.
Right. And I mean, this dictionary comes from the Epicurious Food Dictionary, which we're always using. But really to macerate in a very technical sense means to take a fruit and have it become infused with a liquid's flavor. And that liquid would be brandy or rum. But typically we skip that and we use macerate more generally. And we just use it to do what you were talking about, which is releasing the juices of the fruit.
Well, good. I love this part because, you know, you really learn the lingo of cooking, and that's when somebody says, "Oh, I'm a master," you don't go, "Oh, why'd you do that?"
It sounds like something would make you blind in the 19th century, which is what I think we decided last time.
That's right. Well, that's good. Well, let's get on to our we've gone long here, Helena. Let's go on to our question we have here from, and where did this come from?
Well, this one is actually something I got on my blog yesterday. It's from a reader in Ohio named Cindy. This is nothing to do with Girl Scout cookies, so pardon the tangentialness of this particular question, but she wanted to know, how do you remove the woody ends from asparagus? Because I have a lot of recipes that include asparagus, but sometimes I just assume people know what I mean when I say remove the woody ends. So, Russ, do you cook with asparagus often?
We do all the time.
Okay. Do you remove the woody ends then?
We do.
How do you do that? What's your technique?
Well, I grab both ends and kind of tweak it, and wherever it breaks, that's where the part that's in your, you know, the woody ends in your right hand and the part you eat's in your left hand. And it kind of naturally where it breaks is where you don't try to like make it go to a certain spot or a certain length. Just wherever it breaks, that's where it comes off.
Exactly. That's the most common technique that people use at home. But there is another way. I was talking with my friend Michael last night, and he is vegan, and he eats tons of asparagus. And for vegans, you know, they don't really want to waste much of the asparagus. So if you want longer asparagus stems, what you can do is take a peeler and just peel down the woody end itself, and like just peel it really fast all around, and you'll get off a lot of the woodiness by the hardest part of the woody end is the part that was touching the ground. The part that's like the oldest part of the plant, and it's been exposed to the elements and it's just dry. So you can peel off part of that. So, and you don't peel off all of it. You might peel off a layer all the way around the asparagus spear. And then you, let's say, cook it in the oven, and it's already going to cook down, and that woody end just goes away.
Oh, so, okay. So you just kind of, just scraping the barnacles off, and then you get down to the good stuff.
Right, exactly. Because, I mean, the way Michael explained it to me last night, there's no reason why you can't eat that part of the asparagus.
Right.
You just need to...
It's a little harder.
Yeah, it's just a little bit harder. You just need to cook it down, and you need to, if you peel it, like give it a good peel all the way around, you're not going to notice it's a woody end when you're eating it at all.
Oh, well, that's a good tip. I like that.
Yeah, so Cindy, there's your answer.
Yeah, I always feel guilty when I start throwing those pieces away.
Yes. Yeah, I do too, because, but you know what you can do with them, Russ? You don't have to throw them away.
What?
Yes. Okay, you can make homemade vegetable broth using them.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, you know what? Because I always feel, whenever I get a... I always try to buy the broccoli crowns, because if I buy the broth with all the stems, I always like to include some of the stem, because you need the stem. It's perfectly good.
Yeah.
But you know, the kids always want, I don't want to eat that.
They
want to eat, and then, you know, so we, okay, just eat the tree part, eat the green part. Okay. You know, minimum, but most of the kids, they'll eat the whole thing now. But, whenever I cut off these giant stem, I'm like, oh, what can I do with this stem? Well, you could probably include that in a vegetable broth too.
Oh, definitely. Definitely, definitely. I actually make broth at least once every couple weeks. So whenever I'm cooking, Russ, the stuff that I would typically throw away, like broccoli stems are an example I would give. Asparagus spears. What else would I use? Just random stuff. Like if there's like an old potato or something that I'm not sure if I could if I could eat it, I would like put it in broth. And I mean, just boil it down with seasoning and salt. And after about 30 minutes, you've got yourself a really concentrated, nice broth.
Well, that's great.
Yeah. We'll have to do a whole episode on broth.
No, oh, I'd love to.
All right. Well, Cindy, there's your answer.
Oh, good. Well, Helene, this has been a jam-packed episode. And
for real, yes.
And so... I've got to go do get some. I don't know if I have a fudge cake mix, but I'm going to go get that right now. And I definitely need to get some peppermint extract, because I don't have that. But otherwise, I've got everything else, and so I need to make a quick trip to the store.
Awesome! Yes, this will be fun. This will be fun. I can't wait to see your digital trail of photos and see how they turn out.
Oh, it's going to be great. Well, thank you for all that great stuff, and all the links to everything we talked about will be on the website at homemadeisbest.com. This is show number 7, so you can look for that and check out the photos and links and all the recipes. And thank you, Elena.
Thank you, Russ.
All right, we'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.